CliffCentral.com.
Yebo. And by the way, we will be joined by Yaku next week. He's going to be in on the show on Tuesday with us. So I'm looking forward to having him as one of our special guests as we wrap up the year. We're also going to check in on some of our other regulars, some of the people we spend the most time with here on CliffCentral.com. And you don't want to miss our last week of shows. Next week, we've got some Christmassy stuff coming up as well. Simpiwe and Bulelo and I are here with you this morning, this Wednesday morning, which is like a mini Friday. It's the 15th of December. Tomorrow is a public holiday. What is it, the Day of Reconciliation or something? Yeah.
I think so. Too many public holidays.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's meant to be. Anyway. So we were talking hangover cures just now because Basitsana started a whole thing. And there are so many good suggestions here. And listen, we're going to need this. Even if you're not a big drinker, you're going to need it for other people in your life. If you could see someone is suffering at the Christmas table, or you go out for lunch and you can see that they're carrying a lot of weight from the night before and it's all in their forehead and their eyes are like just trying to close the whole time, some of these suggestions may work. So Quentin says, it's more the preparation of the hangover. So before you go to bed, take a big glass of water, as much as you can before you have to spit it out. And two panados helps the morning headaches. There's some good advice from Quentin. Winsterian Pikachu says, you feel bad because you're drained of vitamins in your brain. So you need to take a multivitamin the night before. Large glass of water reduces hydration and the vitamins work in the body overnight. Reduces dehydration, I think you mean. Yeah, that's good. I've also found, you know what's quite useful is those charcoal tablets, those activated charcoal tablets. They absorb all the like toxins in the stomach, apparently. I don't know if it's true, but it makes me feel better. So I sometimes do those. But Itzana is so grateful. She says, thank you so much, everyone. Literally going to try all the suggestions. When a puza ningi, I mean, she's going to be so drunk over December, Basitsana. She needed these hangover cures badly. Best hangover cure, according to Vyasan, is to buy an extra hot Nando's liver. Throw away the liver and drink the gravy. It works like a bomb.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Wouldn't it be funny if that was like a secret formula that they just stumbled upon and that is the absolute cure? Because, my God, if you were a chemist and you were working in a laboratory on anything, a couple of things that would make you huge money, right? And one of them's already been invented. That's Viagra. The other thing humans would love to have a pill to sort out is a hangover. If you're a scientist and you're not working on a hangover cure, you are wasting your damn time because that is a license to print money. I mean, whichever company comes up with an actual hangover cure, they can charge whatever they want. Whatever they want. I would buy it for 50 Rand a tablet.
More.
100.
You're on the money. You see there, Gareth? You see there? You see, that's a brilliant, brilliant business idea. That. You're on something there.
Isaac's such an asshole. Isaac is trying to be smart here. He says, trivial solution, but don't drink the night before. You got this. Yeah, thanks, Isaac, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's December, Chief. Yeah, December is a long Saturday. Mm-hmm. It's a long Saturday. What do you mean?
It's every day of Saturday. It's into it.
It's December. You know, Gareth was saying yesterday there's a difference between December and December. I promise you, today is the first day of December. People are starting. You know what I mean? And then they're just going to go all the way until the second. Because then on the third, they need to kind of sober up again. Yeah, now we serious. Yeah, work is calling you.
You have to stop walking and bumping into shit by the third.
Dude, like, it's one long Saturday. Laptops are closed. People are not serious about life. They're spending their bonuses. And I see things, bruh.
Janine has a suggestion here, something called Zeolite by a brand called The Real Thing. Wow, okay. Zeolite by The Real Thing removes the toxic metabolites that cause hangovers. It's a volcanic mineral compound. Sounds good, but I can't. If you're the first person to tell me about it, Janine, I don't know if it's trustworthy. Lungile says, my friends hate me because I can't get hangovers. Never had one, no matter how hard they've tried to get me one. I was told I'll start getting them in my late 20s. I'm 30 now. Ha ha, says Lungile. We'll see. Bastard.
He's an X-Man.
Bastard.
But that means also you know your limits. I feel like you're one of those guys, you know, after five glasses, kishap. Like, that's why you're not hanging. I'm already looking at you. I'm like, you're cheating.
I know a lady. I know a lady, we used to snowboard together, and she could go Puzza. With the best of them.
Puzza.
Nothing.
Puzza.
And she would have nothing. So there are these disgusting people who don't feel the effects like all of us human beings.
I've never found a foolproof one, but I'm loving these because I promise you I'm going to implement some of these. Now, here's David. He's got a whole menu. He says you've got to have two ACC 200s. Jesus, two of those. That'll dry you out. One Barocca. One anti-nausea tablet and 1 liter of water. Jesus, David, that sounds like a whole chemist you have to drink before you go to sleep at night.
That's too much. I can't do that.
Too much, right?
People are going to get it wrong.
I think you'd...
Like, you're going to be like, oh, was it two of this or is it one of this? Or
oh, my God.
Do I take this now? Do I take that later? Oh. No. That's too complicated. Especially when you're hanging, you don't want to think. You don't
listen
want
to this.
Be like...
Here's another one. MB's also got a whole list of things. 2 Disprins, 1 Bioplus, 1 Rehydrate, and 2 charcoal tablets. Works every time. It's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different things.
No. You're asking for a disaster. No. Unless you put it in those pill thingy, my bobbies. No,
like
don't do
old
it.
People have. Like old people have where their pills are
Listen,
sorted. You need one
these,
of those.
All these sanctimonious people like Sinister Cabal who says, just don't get wasted. Easy. And Robin says, I don't drink, thank goodness. You guys shut up. You're not
Amazing.
In this. This is not your conversation. You guys get out of this. We don't need you in this conversation. Don't go and like use this as an opportunity to grandstand about how you don't drink, okay? This is not the time.
Fine, keep drinking on your virgin strawberry daiquiris. It's okay.
We don't need you looking down on us when we're trying to find solutions to human problems here. Good Lord.
Yeah.
In fact, they should be happy that we're talking about this because this is a real problem. It affects also people that don't drink. Have you ever spent time with someone who's hanging? Yo. And then they're like, oh, you're making such a noise. I can't handle the spray. And you're just like, so noise. You're like, ah, dude.
Man. Okay, a paramedic told me the best thing to do is take 2 before you party and 1 before you go to bed. Legalon Forte, 140 milligrams. What the hell is that? That sounds like something you need to get a prescription for. Right?
No, that sounds like Thanos' long-lost brother.
Legalon Forte, yeah. It sounds like a Greek god of some kind. I don't know what that
Tracy
is.
Tracy Lee Featherston.
Take your words for it. Your word for it. Okay, I recently had COVID brain fog, so I can't handle a hangover this December, says Sianda. No, but Sianda said December, not December. There is a difference.
Yeah, a marked difference, as the viewers just explained. So from today, every day is a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
South Africans do it right, don't they? We do get down like nobody else. We're into it as well.
Big time, man. This is how we cope with very difficult lives. South Africans are struggling and suffering, man. We have huge unemployment in this country. Our economy is a disaster. Our government steals everything from us. Give us a fucking break. We're allowed to drink.
Yeah.
Give us a break.
No?
We put up with...
Yeah.
We all work for the government for at least 6 months of the year. December is our month to get some back. And you know how much they tax us on our liquor? About half the price,
what's it sitting in?
If not more than half the price, of your bottle of liquor is going to Treasury. So not only do they make our lives a misery, but then they charge us for the thing that makes us feel a little bit better. Bastards.
No. Drink away. No, you've sold. I'm sold. Okay.
Mm.
Mercy.
You know, there's a song.
No mats.
Mm.
There's a Ama Piano song, guys, and it's called Asibe Happy. You know?
Okay.
And all it says, the lyrics is just like Asibe Happy. Guys, let's be happy.
Exactly.
It's December.
Yes.
Let's be happy. That's the theme of December. It's Asibe Happy. Let's
there
be happy.
There we
That's
go.
That's it.
No, so here's Aiden says, 1 hamburger, 1 chocolate, 1 ice cream, 1 hot dog, 1 rump steak. Yes, Aiden.
No.
Who's able to put that down on a hangover?
No. Are you American, dude?
Keenan says, we coloureds. I love the way he speaks on behalf of all coloureds. Keenan says, we coloureds. Just drink 2 beers before work. Hangover gone. Good vibes.
You can't say that.
We coloureds. I love that.
Yeah.
Mm.
every colored person.
Graham's also the one who gives Pumi shit every week on the Burning Platform. Imagine how cheap everything would be if Soweto just paid their electricity bills. Oh, come on. Listen, can we just... what's the Ama Piano song?
Asibe Happy,
yeah. Graham.
Yes. And you're talking about Bushals, not electricity. Two different things.
Yeah.
Asibe Happy.
We should make that our theme. That is our theme for Cliff Central for next week. Asibe Happy. Can we have some banners designed and shit, Simpiwe, please?
Sure.
For next week, guys.
That's the motto.
That's next week. That's what we're going to leave you with. Next week, when we wrap up the show, final show on the 24th. That's going to be all I want you to think about. I see they're happy. Until we come back on the 10th, you do whatever you want. Just be happy. Oh, man. Awesome. Here's another long list of things from Cook Ooh, but the name makes me think that maybe this person knows. Take two panadas, two glasses of water before you go to bed. Another two glasses when you wake up. I have friends who claim the Green Ambulance works cream soda, but I've never tried it. That's a lot of water, hey?
Let's simplify it. If I remember one thing about hangovers, I want to do less. I don't want to do more. Two panados, now this.
Mm.
Oh, no, I'm out of panados now.
Mm. Well, one thing's for sure. I'm after all these cures, I'm going to try one different cure because I've taken screenshots of all of these. I'm going to try a different one for all the days that I drink during the holidays, and I'll come back with my own findings. I'm going to test these things. I'm going to put them to the test. So I'm off to... I'm going to go to the chemist after the show this morning, and I'm going to buy all the things on those different hangover cure lists, and I'm going to try them all, and we'll see which one works the best.
And we will need them more than ever now, because think of it, people can't really travel, right? People going to London would have cancelled. Correct. America still shut. So our friends are going to be around now, especially the rapscallions, you know? The rapscallions are usually the guys that would be gone now. Guys, they've saved all those pounds. Now, what do you think? By 11, Gareth, you know, every day, where are you? I'm at the gate, open. You know it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Absolutely.
So,
you've got to be ready.
I see you're happy.
Isn't that the best motto ever? Thank you, St. Peter. You've improved everything this morning. See what a difference you've made. So, listen, we've got to get to Blind History just now because... We have a brand new episode, and it is the last one for this year, but we will be back with more Blind History in January, and we're going to play out an episode this morning about Karl Marx, which is someone that a lot of people were asking about. When we had our poll up of who people most want to hear about in history, Karl Marx was up at the top of the list. I don't know if he was number one, but he was either number one or number two, and people wanted to know his story. So we put an episode about Karl Marx together, and we will get to that just a little bit later on. So, all right, lots of these great suggestions. Keep them coming, because we're going to try all of these different hangover cures. And between me and Simpiwe, because Bulelo doesn't drink anymore, we will try them out, and we will let you know what we decide is the best one. Okay, so here's an interesting story. This is that, you know, the whole Travis Scott situation with that concert where those people were killed. And people are still talking about this because it hasn't gone away. And obviously the bodies are still dead of those people, including children who were at his concert. There's been a lot of conspiracy theory shit around it. People talking about Satanism, people talking about a lack of organization, that Travis Scott didn't stop the concert in time, that he didn't take any note of the people who were being crushed. Either way, it's a big disaster. And he made an even bigger mess and mistake by going on Charlemagne the God's show, which is, I mean, this guy is like, he's on Sirius, I think. And he's the guy that if you're a rapper, you speak to him. He's like the dude who you go and you confess to. You get interviewed by him, and it either will help you or it will hinder you. And this seems to have been a very bad decision on Travis Scott's part, because it didn't go well. So people, you know, you listen to it, right?
All. 51 minutes of my life that I'll never get back.
Explain.
Oh, Travis Scott did not take any accountability.
Mm.
He did not take any responsibility. He was not remorseful of what happened. He kept blaming, you know, other factors. And, you know, like, we need to investigate what really went wrong. And then I asked him, like, don't you think your music and how you just perform incited this? No, not at all. Raging is such a peaceful thing. It's about love. Yeah? What? What do you mean? Love.
Wow.
And also the interview itself, like Charlemagne, he had like this A4 paper that he was like constantly reading from. So you can tell that they had told him, hey, you can't actually ask him questions that are not on this list. And Travis Scott, what a disappointment. He was just like, yeah, you know, the wristbands, they just let you in. With the technology now, we should get like wristbands that can monitor your heartbeat. Just take accountability. That's it. And he did not do that. So I'm personally just over it. And he could have tried to redeem himself. But after that interview, it's tickets. It's complete tickets for him.
But he hasn't really taken responsibility at any stage of this thing. And all he had to do is at the start of all of this, just say, I'm really sorry that this happened. You know, he should have said, I'm really sorry this happened. This is an absolute disaster. Obviously, we will do whatever we can to help the families because he's got tons of money. He can help them out financially. And also just say, well, we will investigate. You know, you've seen this happen before. People can, in any disaster situation, you just look like you're taking charge and you make an effort to help people and usually they'll forgive you. Not this guy. He's an idiot.
Where's his PR team? His PR team at this stage?
I don't think he has one. He's probably his own PR team.
Yeah, well,
but
that's
it was
problem.
Horrible. It was a horrible 51 minutes. Don't watch it. He did not take any accountability. And I think that's what people wanted. People just wanted him to say, hey, guys, because they asked him, like, did you see the ambulance? Did you see this? Did you hear people ask for you to stop the concert? And he's like, no, I have, like, these earpieces and can't hear anything. Mm. But, like, you know, I would have stopped. But and it's like, dude, just take accountability. Like, just take accountability to say, hey, I didn't think this would happen. He didn't even say, like, you know, I'm sorry for the losses or the families and what. He did not even say that. I'm just so mad.
To your point from earlier, Gareth, and to Sampiwa's point, to what you were saying about, you know, these guys who aren't tempted. You know, the one thing about, or let me say it's true to me, as I've started to make a little bit more money in my career and save better and have a little bit more resources.
Right.
I've realized myself tapping into my ego more. So actually now I realize I need the strong people in my life more and more as I become more financially successful. Because as we know, it does add a quarter of an inch to that member downstairs that you suggested we think with as men. Is this guy here, he's the problem now. Is he needs a PR team because he's a millionaire that's out of control now. Because you could do the apology, non-apology, as you suggested. I'm sorry that this happened. Boom. Walk away. Okay, fine. We're not really happy with that. Walk away. PR team. Maybe you take photos with a few children or whatever PR companies do. I don't know what they do. But this is why men with money, once you start to think your ish don't stink, this is what happens. He'll be gone in 2 years now. This is so sad.
Well, Luzon says, I'm sorry is tantamount to admitting liability. One should express sympathy without acknowledging guilt in that world.
He failed to do that as well.
Didn't even say
he failed. He failed. Even the interview in itself, like, you can tell if someone's being remorseful and is like, I didn't want this to happen. No, he's just chilling like, that was also frustrating. Like, on some, okay, sure, but like, you don't look as if this is something that you really didn't want to happen.
Well, Lindiwe says he lost his humanity long ago. Sounds like you might agree with that, Simpiwe. And Yonder says, Charlemagne, he's reserving his hatred for Charlemagne, not for Travis. Says he's not big at all in the hip-hop world. He just interviews people who have something happening, and then he circulates. He's a punk. Eminem showed who he is on the Kamikaze album. Ay, ay, ay. All right, now we're not going to go into a whole thing about whether Charlemagne is, you know, great or not, because as far as I can tell, the guy's carved out a pretty damn good career for himself. And he seems to have...
he's doing all right.
He seems to have a lot of fans, and he has a lot of credibility, you know? It's the same as Mac G getting all these celebrities to admit things that they shouldn't be admitting and talk the way that they shouldn't be talking about each other. I mean, there was more controversy this week. Tekle Modise and a whole lot of other shit, right?
I don't know what's in that gin. It's that gin that he provides the guests. It's a truth serum.
So what happened now?
You drink I just think he said something. I haven't really been following it because I'm just like, social media, get December, take a break. But once again, there's another celebrity on the podcast who said something that's gotten people in a very, hey, well, you can't say that, you can't do that. And it's like, ah, oh, that gin, I think
which
it's that
strange.
Gin.
I love the way.
Deco's usually very buttoned up.
Let me tell you something. I love the way that all these people are getting like outraged on Twitter about what these celebrities are saying, as if celebrities aren't also human beings. And as if they're so good, they're such good people, that they don't do this stuff. Because the people who are getting the most outraged are probably people who are doing the same stuff that they're outraged at the celebrities for. But they somehow think the celebrities are better than them, or should be better than them. They should live to a higher standard. Like, if you are a drunk without a job, and you live with your parents, and you've never achieved anything, and you listen to a podcast where some celebrity is admitting that they got drunk last Saturday and crashed their car, and you're like, yeah, you're irresponsible. How can you do this? But actually, you are living in your parents' house, you're a drunk, and you don't have a job. Like, how do you get to throw stones at that person? How do you get to criticize Teko Modise? Huh? If you're a nobody on Twitter, he's a bad person. Who are you? How come we don't know who you are with your three followers? I'll tell you why. Because even if Deco Modise in this case, or anybody else who goes on these podcasts, even if they are not perfect human beings, which nobody is because we're flawed at every level, still better than you. Still better than you. Just saying. Anyway. I heard on Joe Budden's podcast that Travis Scott insisted on doing the interview against his team's advice. You see, this also happens, right, Bulelo? You know, you've got these people, and they are meant to be taking advice from their team. They've got a manager, they've got a publicist, they've got a PR team or whatever. But then they think they know better, so they just countermand them. They say, no, I'm paying the bills, I'm doing the interview. Stupid move, right?
Very. Just go talk to Oprah. I say, Oprah, what did you do? What did you do for 30 years? Okay, great. I'm doing what you did. Tell me every day. Write it down for me. I'm going to give you $1 million. Do that. Whatever Oprah did. Because she's nailed it.
She's nailed it.
Is Oprah Jesus? Because, I mean, you never hear malarkey. You never. Because, I mean, she's human. You never hear anything about Oprah. I mean, we're like, okay, she bought her own channel, $3 billion. Gail's now cleaning her house. Yeah. You know, Stedman's obviously
also
washing her feet.
House.
I mean, just a legend. Just a legend.
Right.
Oh, I love Oprah Winfrey.
I bet you if Travis Scott sat down with Mum Oprah, the interview was going to be so heartfelt. Oh, no, you can hear them?
The screaming.
Tell me about that moment. Yeah. Let's go back into that moment. How were you feeling?
And you know which one Oprah does as well? She does this one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That one, yeah, where
she does the two fingers.
Grabs the chin and leans forward.
Mm.
Yeah, I love that.
Get him, Oprah. Now you got Lance Armstrong. Get him, Oprah.
Mm-hmm. Oprah.
And then she also hit you with the, when I was at one of your concerts, you know, I felt like this electrifying energy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I, from that perspective, I can relate. But what do you think went wrong that night?
Mm. Yeah, she'll say something.
That's how she gets you.
No, she goes, why don't you... Travis, why don't you take us back to that night?
I said, get him, Oprah. That's when I get the popcorn.
As you looked out at the crowd, how were you feeling? And when you heard for the first time that there was something going wrong, what was your gut instinct? What was your initial instinctive reaction? You know, that's what she does. She's good at this shit. Oprah is a professional. She knows what she's doing. Travis Scott.
Yeah, he should
Travis
have just went straight to Mom Oprah. Yeah. She was going to clean it up for him.
So why am I getting social media messages from people about Britney Spears and Diane Sawyer? Does anyone know what's happened there?
Oh boy, I know, but I will
honestly
find out.
Don't know,
I will have
please,
an update.
We need to know because we've, you know, you and I have got a dog in this fight now, Mbulelo. We've been saying for the longest time that Brittany is a disaster from top to bottom. She's going to burn out. She's going to spend all of her money. She's going to end up in a trailer park. She's going to be dead soon without this curator. That's what we've said from the beginning. So now we need to actually pay attention. And I must be honest with you, I haven't looked at this. So I'm not clued up, but we will get clued up. We've got a whole week of shows next week. We've got to talk about something, right? Theron says, I agree with Simpiwe. There's something in the gin. All Teko said was that he didn't have a great relationship with her, whoever her was. When they broke up, she tried to accuse him of domestic violence with old photos. Ooh, I'm going to say it again, even though it's so controversial. These ladies, and I'm not saying this is what happened here because I don't know the details, but these ladies who make up abuse, that make allegations that are not true, you are damaging the case for those women who are going through real stuff. Please don't do it. Especially not just to get back at some ex. Please. Anyway, Isaac says, MACG is doing a better job than most useless newspapers that cook up stories to destroy celebrities' lives. At least the celebrities themselves tell their own stories. Yeah, that's also true. And you can't hold him responsible if they implicate themselves in stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Let's do that. Let's let's give them a chance to tell their own story. No wonder robots will now give birth. This world has gone crazy, says Lindiwe. Yeah, Lindiwe, you need to have a drink this weekend because you are not having a great morning. You don't like Travis Scott. I understand that. You're feeling very negative about humanity, Lindiwe. So this morning, as soon as you've finished all the things you have to do, because I'm sure that you're not going to be working hard tomorrow or Friday, take the day, go home a little early, invite some friends around, have a few drinks. That's what I want you to do, Lindiwe. What is our motto?
In fact, Lindiwe.
What's our motto?
Asibeheb.
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 There we go.
Lindiwe, this is for you. This is for the next couple of days. Today you start with Wine Wednesday, okay? Right? Then you do Puza Thursday, right? Then it's like Friday vibes. I don't know what they usually call Friday vibes. Then Saturday, you have a nice braai, and then Sunday, you relax. That's 5 days already sorted. Your life's going to be great. I got you.
Beautiful. All right. It is time for some blind history. So from Simpiwe and Bulelo and I, we are going to leave you and love you for this morning. We'll be back tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Sorry. Tomorrow's holiday. We'll be back on Friday, though. At 6 a.m. because that's
be
not
Monday.
You're going to your wedding. You let us know how that goes.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll send you photos of me in a tracksuit.
Very good. It is time for Blind History Season 6, and this is a new episode. It's about Karl Marx, and a lot of people have been asking about him, the father of communism and socialism. To some people, he was a wicked ideologue with the worst plans for social engineering. To others, he was a heroic thinker who conceived of a freer and fairer world. No matter what you might think of him, Karl Marx and his shadow loom large in modern politics, in history, and in society today. So happy holidays from Anthony Miederer and the team at Taylor Blinds and Shutters. You can find out more from them by going to taylorblinds.co.za. And maybe because you're at home during the holidays, you'll take a look at your windows and go, you know what? I need a blind there. I need to change something here. Get hold of Taylor Blinds. It's very, very easy. They will send someone round. Ask Mbulelo. He's already done this. taylorblinds.co.za. Excellent. Here is your latest episode. Are you ready? Let's go. Imagine your ideas outlived you by hundreds of years. Imagine if your face was printed on posters and revolutions across the world marched in your name. Imagine your ideas would lead directly and indirectly to the death of 200 million people. This is the complex legacy of Karl Marx, a man seen by some as the greatest thinker of them all, and by others as nothing more than a dangerous radical. In a dull cemetery in London, his stone bust stares out at the world, dreaming of utopia. Under it lies the body of a pauper, who had plans for everyone else's money, but had none of his own. This is Blind History, Season 6, Episode 5, and it is Karl Marx. Karl Marx is a controversial figure, and that's, I mean, to say the least. But I know that he's been one that people have really asked for. They want to know all about him. They want to know where he came from, what he did, what his life was really like. And they also want to know about his philosophies, because those have had an outsize effect on the world since he died. Not so much while he lived, but since he died. And with me, as always, is my co-host for Blind History, Anthony Miederer.
Great to be back here.
Good. Karl Marx, I mean, what do you think of the man? Let's start off there, and then we can get into the details.
Yeah, very intellectual. You know, my take on it is if we were living in the 1800s and we've had a whole lot of Napoleon, you've had a whole lot of autocratic rule, the Tsars, the Kaisers, Bismarck, that's a bit later. But, you know, the change in history, and it might have felt a lot better then, you know, and what he was talking about, because, you know, I think through time it was often that the working class were downtrodden. And there was a need for Karl Marx in 2021. I don't know.
You've just sketched exactly the context that I was hoping you would, because, I mean, this guy was born in Germany in what was then Prussia, and he was born to an upper middle class family. They were Jewish actually, but they converted because it was really tough. Listen, I mean, from this point on until at least the 1960s, it was very tough to be a Jew in Germany. And before this, obviously, too. His father was Jewish, but he converted to Protestantism. And his mother was from a wealthy Dutch family. But it seemed to me that this guy, his perpetual struggle wasn't the class struggle. It wasn't really any of his philosophy either. He was, as you mentioned, very bright, hugely intelligent kid, and grew up with all of his teachers and headmasters and lecturers thinking he was some kind of prodigy. But his problem was he couldn't get money. His mother even said later on, it would have been nice if Karl could have earned some money rather than written so much about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that was his struggle. His struggle his whole life long, it seems to have been based on where he could get some cash, who he could borrow money from. He was always bumming off Engels, which we'll talk about a little later on. But he was very bright, and he made an enormous contribution to the time. He was a critic of political economy. He was a sociologist, a political theorist, a philosopher. He was also a journalist and, for a time, a lecturer in university. And it's funny that most of the Marxists in the world today are also either journalists or lecturers. Very few of them actually go into business because they have practical problems with business. You know, they think it's exploitative and all the rest. But he was born into a Germany where, really, listen, it wasn't fun for the working classes, and there's no way you can sugarcoat that. It was just after the Industrial Revolution had started. Factories were exploiting people left, right, and center. People's standard of living had dropped, especially in places like Britain. They'd moved into the cities, which were hellholes. They were working long hours. Children even worked long hours. It was awful to be a worker, and a guy like Marx came along with these novel ideas about how the world could be better and what kind of a utopia they could have if the workers just took control. And it was very appealing to people.
Yeah, and early on in his life, he spoke very much about more of a humanistic background and the way he felt about what you were just saying now. The one point I've quoted is, the brotherhood of man is no mere phrase with them, but a fact of life. And the nobility of man shines upon us from their work-hardened bodies. So he really was feeling with the people then. Later on, he was very theoretical and
much more clinical about things.
Much more clinical, correct. A lot of people spoke about him not really having a lot of emotion.
But I think part of that was also, I think he reserved his emotion for his family. It's undoubtedly a huge part of Karl Marx's story. His wife, Jenny von Westphalen, who he was devoted to. And her parents weren't so sure that he was a good catch, because they were worried, maybe they knew something we didn't, about whether or not he could provide for her. And they were a, you know, respectable German family, but he loved her. And he stayed married to her and devoted to her right to the end. And she died, and shortly after that, his daughter died, and then shortly after that, he died. So they all kind of were in this family and hugely in love with each other. And I think when she went and when the daughter died, he was just, you know, bereft. There was no point in living anymore, because even all his intellectual pursuits and his his contribution to philosophy and the fact that he had all these people around the world calling themselves Marxist, even within his lifetime, he always said, "I'm not a Marxist," which I thought is interesting.
Yeah, his dad did say, worried about Jenny and her future with Carl, and he feared that Jenny was destined to become a sacrifice to the demon that possessed Carl. So,
yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting statement, because there are still so many people in the world who regard Karl Marx as the most evil man. You know, whether or not he would have agreed with the things that were carried out in his name almost 100 years after his birth, because he was born in 1818 and the Russian Revolution was almost exactly 100 years later. Whether or not Leninism, communism, Stalinism, Maoism, and other forms of communism all over the world would have been the kind of thing that he foresaw it's a subject of huge debate among academics still to this day. And there are many people who defend Karl Marx. You know, the Chinese still regard him as a hero. There are statues to Karl Marx all over China, probably more than anywhere else in the world. There is one in his birthplace of Trier in Germany, which they kind of begrudgingly put up, because obviously, you know, their experience with East German communism soured the idea a little bit for them. But it's starting to come back, and I tried to read a number of articles and books that were more complimentary towards him, that gave a little bit more balanced approach, because I've always been raised to think, because of the people I've listened to and I've been influenced by, that this guy was a maniac, and what he was suggesting was, you know, the utter social engineering and complete destruction of the world's population for this ideal that was impossible to reach. But in all the more gentle approaches to Karl Marx, I think people have largely said that he was a theoretical guy. He was a man who was a thinker, not a practical doer. He would never have wanted to run for office himself. He didn't think of himself as a leader, and he certainly didn't want to spawn a movement that would be bastardized the way that it was. So perhaps he's a very misunderstood character in history.
I think so as well, and often, you know, he was much stronger in a smaller group of individuals. You know, he wouldn't be standing in front of 10,000 people like Lenin might have been, or, you know, he wasn't a great orator. But his approach was definitely scientific, the approach of looking at the way history dictated classes as it developed, and the more modern things became, classes were dictated accordingly for that era.
I mean, his criticisms of capitalism are still valid today. You know, if you look at Facebook and Google and these enormous companies that are now conglomerating and buying up all the smaller ones, and they're just growing to proportions that even he might not have foreseen. But he said that was the ultimate goal of a market capital economy, that eventually they would squeeze out the smaller players and these guys would become like states. They would make rules like states. And I don't think he was that far wrong on that. So we have to give credit where credit's due. Let's just talk about, he went to the University of Bonn to study law. I don't think he finished law, but he did start to earn money as a lecturer later on. So he may have also gone into politics and philosophy at that point. But what was interesting is that he also started writing, and he started working for various newspapers. And it would be exhaustive to list all the newspapers, but everywhere he went, the newspaper was shut down for being too leftist.
But not only necessarily for him, because I think during the time in Bonn and later on in Berlin, it was very volatile politically. He wasn't the only one. So he just, I suppose, fitted in very much with what was going on. He wrote very well, and it made a lot of sense. That's why he was accepted very well in the publications of people that believed in what he believed in.
I mean, later on, he'd go on to write these political treatises, which we know well. But his first published book was actually a pretty anti-Semitic text, which was called On the Jewish Question. And even though he was descended through his father's side from the Jewish people, he clearly espoused some views which were not particularly favorable if you look back in history now, and they're still used against him by people who argue that Marx was not a good person and that he had, you know, no moral or ethical guidelines that led him anywhere. He was a strict materialist. He didn't have a religious feeling, although he did get married to Jenny in a Protestant church. And, you know, for all intents and purposes in those days, you had to call yourself something. And he had to call himself something, so he called himself a Protestant. But really, his big preoccupation was controlling the means of production. and allowing the workers to determine their own future. And he had this view that if there was a classless society where no one owned anything, that everyone would be peaceful. It's almost like John Lennon's song, you know, Imagine All the People. And obviously, I think even he knew that there were parts of the real world that would just make that impossible. His ultimate belief was that communism, or Marxism in its original form, would develop almost because capitalism was full of contradictions. It would happen to fill those gaps, and that it would be an eventual thing rather than a revolutionary thing.
A lot of the things, you know, we still hear very much around the world. It's, I think, the 10 immediate measures that he talks about, from a progressive income tax, abolishment of inheritances. That's quite hectic.
Well, we've got some of that. I mean, some of those became law in countries like England.
And then a free education for children, land ownership, state-owned enterprise, taking hold of the lands and using that rent to drive government. So government was more organizational rather than dictating policy. That was everything that he proposed. And it's still, there's a lot of countries today that are still using part of it, diluted versions or...
Sure. Even here in South Africa, we have, you know, supposedly free education and free healthcare for people. We have a progressive taxation system. So some of that stuff comes from this guy. He has an incredible long-lasting effect on society well after the time he's dead. And I wonder, and I think many people wonder, what he would think of the movements that were established in his name much later on. But his personal life was difficult. As I said earlier, he was good friends with Engels. And he was very influenced by Hegel when it comes to philosophy. But he kept on asking Engels for money. I mean, he met him in 1844 and they became lifelong friends. But at a certain point, he was desperate for money. His wife was very sick. He didn't have a job. And he kept on asking Engels to send him cash. And Engels' wife had just died. And he wrote this very, like, angry response back to Marx saying, hey, you know, everybody else is giving me a bit of sympathy because my wife just hopped the perch, and all you're doing is asking for money.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I mean, they couldn't even afford a coffin, to be honest. You know, I think his life was actually very tough. I mean, his daughter died, and then his wife was rushing around looking for a coffin. They had no money. But he was very demonstrative, and he really loved his family. So he was a very affectionate father. But
yes.
I mean, without money, I don't care how affectionate you are, you really struggle.
No.
And I think it was very hard. And I think in the end, Jenny suffered a number of breakdowns, you know, when they were in England.
Right.
They were evicted from their house. Often their belongings were seized. Quite tough going for somebody that's now revered around the world in the early 1900s. He was basically destitute.
Well, to his mother's point, you know, if you're going to talk about money all the time, you need to know something about money. And in order to know something about money, you've got to prove that practically your ideas about money can have real-world consequences. And clearly for him, it didn't. I mean, he wrote the Communist Manifesto, which is probably his most famous work. It's argued Das Kapital, which was a much later work of his, is regarded as a masterwork of communist thinking. And both of them obsessively about, you know, the industrial revolution, about capitalism, about the employer and the employee, about exploitation, the kind of things that stand in stark contrast to the kinds of stuff that happened in the early 20th century, which very often weren't about those things at all. And it's ironic that the people who were talking about communism then and now, and who are most interested in it, are not usually the workers. It's usually intellectuals and academics. And they play with these ideas because they can. They have the time. They have secure jobs. They have that kind of impact on the world that they can talk about these things in, you know, flowery terms, but never have to practically make it happen. So there are a lot of criticisms leveled at him from that point of view.
It's also the people that actually use Marxism. So if we looked at Lenin, we look at Stalin, those type of characters, dictatorial, but using Marxism, it's, you know, in some way to feather their pockets. I mean, that was never his intention.
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, a lot of people have said that they're communists, and really they're not. The Chinese even today. I mean, China, you can argue, is in name a communist or a socialist country, but in practice, it's probably more capitalistic than most of the West. You just have to go to a place 100%. Like Shanghai to see it for yourself. I mean, you're in business. Yeah. You know how they supply the world with just about anything at any price. That's yeah. capitalism. They don't care about exploiting the worker, do they? Not necessarily.
Not at all.
Yeah. So it's interesting. He did spend most of his life outside of Germany. You know, once he and Jenny left there, they couldn't really go back because he was an enemy of the state with all his crazy ideas, and he was considered politically dangerous. They did live in Brussels for a while and Paris for a while. That's where he met Engels. And ultimately in London, he never really had great health. He wasn't a fit, physically successful and happy specimen. He was kind of always a little bit sick. He had many illnesses through his life. His skin gave him problems. He had that big beard, which everybody remembers and which all the statues of him show, and like very long, flowing, quite wiry hair. But he eventually died in the year 1881. And the poor guy, I mean, Engels's speech included this passage from his friend Wilhelm Liebknecht, who said, "On the 14th of March, 2:45 in the afternoon, the greatest living thinker ceased to think. He had been left alone for scarcely 2 minutes, and when we came back, we found him in his armchair, peacefully gone to sleep, but forever."
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, he did have two surviving daughters, and he had two sons-in-law who were also in attendance. They were proud socialists. I don't think you could really argue with, you know, your father-in-law if you were them. And he had been predeceased by his wife and his eldest daughter. And really, he died a very unhappy man. He was very depressed. But ultimately, his contribution and his works have lived on far beyond his mortal life. And I think that it would be stupid for anyone to say that Marx wasn't important.
Yeah, 100%. His two great discoveries of the law of development of the human history and the law of motion of the bourgeoisie society, and the fact he was also a revolutionary. He did have that part of him as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it took balls to stand up to the establishment like he did. And
agreed.
Just as we look to people today who are willing to stand up to governments and to tyranny, and we look at them and we consider them brave, in his day, he must have been thought of the same way by people, ordinary people.
Agreed. If you can just imagine killing a czar, he was moved by what he considered to be the selfless courage of the Russian terrorist who assassinated the Tsar Alexander II in 1881.
Wow. And that was like a preview of what would come 100 years later, or 50 years later at that point.
Yeah, it's 1917 or thereabouts.
That's it. So an incredible life, certainly a brilliant brain, and someone who is loved and hated by people who've never known him to this very day. Karl Marx. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But funny enough, his first published piece was a piece of poetry that he wrote about his wife.
Oh, funny enough. I didn't know that.
Cliffcentral.com